From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 23rd day of August, 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, and will help us take a look at the marketplace for the day. We'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass of Agrible Nutrient Ag Solutions to discuss the weather forecast, and we'll hear all about the Pro Farmer National Crop Yield Estimates. I talked to Brian Grady already from Pro Farmer, and he'll have those numbers for you as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, September corn down 3.5 cents. It finished at 3.59¾. December 3.67¾. 3¼ lower. The March down 3 at $3.80. The May down 2¼. 3.88½. And July at 3.95¼. Down 2 cents. September soybeans 12¾ lower at 8.43¼. November 8.56½. Down 12¼. In January, 11¼ cents lower at 8.71¼. The March contract down 10¼ at 8.85¼. And May futures $8.97¼. 9¾ cents lower. Bean oil down 20 cents at 28.34. The bean meal $3.80 lower at $289.90. Wheat futures soft red up 8 at 4.75¼. The hard red down a penny and 3/4 at 3.91½. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August contract 35 cents lower at $104.62½. October $99.40, down $1.70. Feeders down $1 and a nickel at $137.35. And lean hogs at $59.30, the $3 limit lower for the day. Crude oil is down $1.32, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average about 525 points lower. Next week is the Farm Progress Show. Join us in the Illinois tent on the Decatur FPS site. We'll have all kinds of analysts, brokers, and of course the FarmDoc team during the day. Check it out at willag.org.
Support comes from Risk Management Commodities, presenting a commodities discussion on agronomics, market volatility, USDA crop report, and fall weather at 11 a.m. on August 26th at the Hog Heaven Barbecue in Mount Carmel. Lunch will be served. Reservations at 765-423-1385 or email kel at riskcom.biz.
Well, on this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalcommodityanalytics.com or Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Gosh, what a busy day today.
Yes, globalanalytics.biz.
Yeah, that's right, globalanalytics.biz. I said it right the first time once. That's all right.
Today it's been.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, if you want to know where to go, it's globalanalytics.biz, right?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, you'll have so much that you need to put up there. We'll get to the Pro Farmer numbers in a bit. Those probably should have been, well, when they came out after the close, they should be supportive at some point, but who knows what that means. There are lots of things going on in the middle of the day. President Trump responding to what the Chinese have done in the way of a response in the trade war. It just seems like things are escalating pretty quickly here. Although the markets held together pretty well, can you tell me something about how you see it unfolding?
I think the listener out there has seen the value of Will Radio at this stage of the game. And I mean, I say that because we are at historic times right now, and it shouldn't be a surprise when I talk about the dollar and when other analysts on Will Radio talk about the dollar. But we had a market today that should have taken grains down as hard probably as the livestock finished, with the hogs down limit, the feeders down at limit at times, and fat cattle down, 2%, crude oil down 3%+ at times. But what happened instead, Todd, was that the gold shot up 2% as the dollar started to go lower and lower and lower and lower. And in fact, the range today in the dollar index is about a 1% move from high to low. The last time we saw that was back on January 2nd, where we had a 1.2% gain on the day from high to low. But it has been a long time since we've seen a 1% shot down from high to low in the trading day. And what explains that is the idea that since the Chinese came out and pushed this rebuttal and reprisal back onto the United States. And then President Trump came out and talked specifically about the Federal Reserve and President Xi as potential enemies in the same tweet. The dollar started to find that as very displeasing in terms of supportive for the U.S. markets. And so we saw for the first time in a long time, the U.S. dollar fall with the stock markets. And it was really interesting. Right before we came on the air, the Bank of England head of the central bank, Mr. Carney, just got done speaking in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where the big Kansas City Fed annual meeting is going on today and yesterday. And he specifically said, I am taking aim at the U.S. dollar and its destabilizing role in the world economy. That's what means a lot going into Sunday night's trade, if you ask me. In fact, I put that as a number one top of the list priority to watch going into Sunday night's trade, because if you have one of your greatest allies in terms of central bank monetary policy talking down the dollar, it's essentially saying they've had enough of this kind of volatility and this liquidity issue, low interest rates, weak growth, this U.S.-led type financial system. And so that is a big, big deal, because we now have a sell signal in some of the dollar charts, and that actually could insulate us, I think, in the grain trade going forward.
Okay, so I'm going to read through the president's tweets for the day. However, it appears that the market's been far more stable, I think, than most would have thought, given this set of tweets. So it begins here. The first tweet is, as usual, the Fed did nothing. It's incredible that they can speak without knowing or asking what I am doing, which will be announced shortly. We have a very strong dollar and a very weak Fed. I will work brilliantly with both, and the U.S. will do great. Which he followed up with the tweet that you just discussed. My only question is, who is our bigger enemy, Jay Powell or Chairman Xi? That concerned the marketplace. And then went on to say, our country has lost stupidly trillions of dollars with China over many years. They have stolen our intellectual property, and remarked on the things that he has talked about for some time as the reason for the trade war with China. And saying our great American companies are hereby ordered to immediately start looking for an alternative to China, including bringing home your companies and making your products in the USA. And he specifically calls out carriers, FedEx, Amazon, the UPS, and Post Office, to search for and refuse all deliveries of fentanyl from China as well. So there are a lot of things that are happening in that set of tweets. The marketplace, I think, is still in the middle of trying to evaluate what all of this means, waiting for the president to respond again this afternoon. He's supposed to talk, I guess, and to see what China has to say. So there's just so much going on. And farmers are still waiting, I suppose, to see what their crop yields look like at the same time, and hoping that, they will get a bump in the corn market. The Chinese soybean market, the market with China for soybeans has disappeared. The Chinese today said that they would be, and one of the reasons, I guess, Mike, that pork was down and maybe beef too, is that they did raise the tariffs on at least pork and maybe other products, right?
Yeah, pork and beef. And, we were already running at a 62% tariff roughly for the pork. So another 10% would put you essentially paying, 75% more than what you could get around the world. And I think the trade was really sitting here saying, maybe the Chinese really don't want our pork. I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to have to take our pork. And I won't belabor that point because there's so much more to talk about. But I think, Todd, in that litany that you went through, which I think is very necessary, and I'm thankful you did what you did there, you can hear that President Trump, and we've talked about this on one or two commodity weeks before the last time I was on, that President Trump wants a weak dollar because he feels as though the U.S. is getting shortchanged by having a strong dollar policy as he battles with the trade partners to get better trade deals. And so the natural reaction by many of our trade partners, especially China, is to go ahead and just keep weakening their currency as we shut down more trade with them. And that just gives them more foothold into the marketplace as far as exporting and taking business away from us. And it also forces them to import from everybody but us because their currency is so weak against ours. So you have now, and this is where the historic part comes in, you have now a president that does not want a strong dollar. And he essentially said that in that group of commentary there that you read, and you have the Bank of England not wanting a strong dollar. You essentially have the world saying, we don't want the Bretton Woods policy anymore of a dollar-led currency market. And that's the kind of thing that really can change history. And I'm not saying it's there yet, but we are on a path at this point in a trajectory. And if we do weaken the dollar, then you will see inflation go up and you can start to think, and I'm writing about this right now. I've been doing about 4 months of research on this. The interest rates that we're seeing, these negative interest rates, the fact that the German government sold negative 30-year or 10-year bonds for the first time this week and sold a large amount of them in negative territory, and investors still thought it was a good investment. The fact that we're here, if the dollar goes down, those negative interest rates will even be looked worse upon. And what I'm getting at is if you start to see the dollar go down and inflation go up, you could see a real issue with this market come back in where the interest rates are going to have to go up, real interest rates and risk go up. And this is where it comes into a historic issue.
Well, indeed it will. Any final note before I let you go for the day?
Well, going into Sunday night, it's going to be terribly volatile because, as you said, President Trump hasn't said anything. The final note I would give is dollars, number one. The Trump administration said they're going to tack on 500 million gallons of biofuel for 2020 and also biodiesel for 2020 and 2021. So another 175 roughly million bushels of corn. We could assume that if we go to a 15.5 billion gallon number, that is supportive. And obviously the pro farmer number is very supportive. Why? Because they matched up with the DTN yield estimate of 163. So now you got two big private sources saying it's not 168, 169, it's 163. So we've got to go through all that on Sunday night and Monday.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Mike.
My pleasure.
That's Mike Zuzulow. He's with Global Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We know all week long we've been following along with the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and been reporting on each state's individual yields, but frankly, it's what those final numbers look like on the national side that makes a difference. And the folks at Pro Farmer take the yield data and then they massage that and put it back together. Brian Grady is here to tell us what they came up with. Thanks, Brian, for being here. First, can you give us the difference between the tour and what these pro farmer numbers we're about to hear might be in terms of what they mean?
Sure. So the crop tour numbers we released Monday through Thursday are samples pulled from fields across the seven Corn Belt states, crop tour states. And we go into the fields, pull out the samples, do the calculations, put them into a spreadsheet, and it spits out numbers and averages them up. So those are the ones that were released Monday through Thursday. These estimates from Pro Farmer take into account the crop tour data, but they also take into account other factors like acreage, the maturity or immaturity of the crop this year, areas outside of where we sampled on crop tour, how we think they'll finish, those types of factors. And so it's crop tour data, objective data there with analysis perspective and more.
And what numbers did you come up with?
Pro Farmer estimates the national corn crop at 13.358 billion bushels on a national average yield of 163.3 bushels per acre. Now we put a plus or minus 1% on our corn estimate, and that would give us a yield range from 161.7 bushels per acre to 164.9. The production there would be 13.224 billion bushels to 13.492 billion bushels. On the soybeans, we have a national average production number of 3.497 billion bushels on an average yield of 46.1 bushels per acre. For soybeans, we do plus or minus 2%. That would give us a yield range of 45.2 to 47.0 and a production range of 3.427 billion bushels to 3.567 billion bushels.
Well, those numbers are well below the USDA August estimates. And I think most people who were following along realized that your statewide numbers on the tour were below what USDA had for each state. And that's different than normal. Normally, because you go through the best areas, you come up with something a little better. This year, you were the first objective yield in these states. Why do you think you found something different this year than in previous years?
Well, on corn, the big thing was the ear counts. They're just not there. You know, we took samples and ear counts were down in all the states. And so, you know, just not as many ears there. Blank stocks and skips and rows and things like that. The byproduct of very rough spring conditions and in all likelihood that many of the acres were planted into conditions that were far less than ideal when guys could actually go. So that was part of it there. On the soybean side of things, the pod counts, huge reductions year over year in pod counts. And the soybean factory or yield factory just isn't there. There just aren't that many pods. And as a result, we did make pretty significant downside reductions to what USDA estimated the crops at on August 1.
How did you deal with the maturity issues?
That's all factored into it. You know, we have no real way of specifically doing it, but we do have history. And we went back and looked at years that had immature crops, looked at how they performed into the close of the growing season and tried to factor that in and use some mathematics behind that as well. And that's how we came up with the immaturity factor on that.
Were you surprised that the crops were in as good a conditions as they seemed to be as you traveled across the Midwest?
Well, so, you know, sometimes looks can be deceiving. And I think that from the road, the crops look a lot better than when you get out there. And when you get out there, there's nicks and there's holes and there's all these factors that came into play for us when we came up with the pro farmer estimates. Because what you see from the road isn't always what you get when you get three or more rows into the field. And I think that that's pretty obvious across all the Corn Belt this year. There were some good areas, no doubt about that. It isn't all poor, but overall substandard in terms of what we would expect from the Corn Belt states.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian.
You bet, Todd.
That's Brian Grady. He's with Pro Farmer. Helped us to wrap up a week-long look at the condition and size of the crop of the United States as scouts fanned out across the Corn Belt. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribulm to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Let's begin with the recent rain and, you know, some of that wind that came along with it earlier in the week.
Yeah, it was a rough week in terms of severe weather. We saw that large squalling that passed through the middle part of the state, came out of Iowa, and as it did so, it produced quite a few severe wind reports. In total, I think on that particular day, we had over 360 reports of severe weather. Many of them were of wind damage, and we certainly saw some wind damage across central Illinois. And then following that, we had just yesterday the storms that fired up again to our south. And some of those were producing cold air funnels around here. So they look like funnels, like a tornado would, but they're often very weak. And if they ever touch down, they do very, very little damage. But overall, I think what's going to happen is we're going to look back on this last 10 days and really see that much of the country that in the part of the Corn Belt that really needed some rainfall got it. And I think that's at least what the markets are going to see, is that they're going to see rain across the place that had been dry. Even despite the latest drought monitor that came out and didn't show much change in total drought area in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, parts of Michigan, even parts of Ohio, those places did get a drink. And so I think it's got our attention off of the desperate need for rainfall and on to other things now. We do have another chance at rain coming at the end of the weekend and the beginning of next week as a big low pressure system goes through central Canada. But I think our discussion now turns more towards some cooler weather.
So tell me about those, because I saw some 30s in a few places in the United States.
Yeah, we did. We saw early this morning up in northern Michigan, northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, low temperatures that got down to around 35 degrees. And that just, you know, that can happen. We have cold front that passed through, clear skies, light winds, and temperatures will bottom out like that. But, you know, I think that what's on a lot of folks' minds is, you know, we need some heat to finish out this crop. And what I don't like to have to report is that we've had pretty good storage of some colder air that's run through the Canadian prairies up to almost Alaska, at least, let's say, east of Alaska. And that cold air is there, and you can kind of just think of it as kind of, it's prepared. In other words, if a big trough does show up in the jet stream in, you know, middle to late September and early October, it's got some cold air to work with. So if we don't want to see an early frost, which most of us do not, and we need to do something to moderate that air mass. And so what I'm looking at here is I'm trying to understand if anything's in the works to do that. And unfortunately, because of the behavior of the flow of the jet stream out in the Pacific, we are really going to be featuring more broad troughing across the middle part of North America. And as a result of that, we're going to be seeing our temperatures in the coming days and even weeks favor cooler temperatures overall by a few degrees. Now, the problem is a few degrees cooler than normal really limits our ability to accumulate the heat units that we need to finish this crop. And it puts that crop that was planted late, anything after, you know, late May, but early June especially, is now more vulnerable to even just an on-time frost, which for us here in central Illinois is sometime around the 15th of October, maybe a little bit later than that. So I am concerned about the setup of the warm water in the in the North Pacific. I'm concerned about the lack of sea ice in the Arctic Sea and what that means toward ridging over Alaska. And just remember, usually when we have big ridging over Alaska, we have troughing in the middle part of the United States and in Canada, which tends to lead toward a cooler pattern.
What are the long-range forecasts showing?
Yeah, well, just last night we had the release of the new European Weekly. So this is a forecast that runs out about 6 weeks. And it's from the world's best model, the European model. And what it showed is, what's more important, I guess, than what it showed is its trend. And it did not back away from the overall near average to cooler than average weather forecast all the way through the beginning of October. And it comes back to that same discussion. We would much rather see the heat that's needed to finish this crop. And it makes any crop that was planted late or any crop in the northern part of the U.S., you know, corn especially, more vulnerable to an early frost. So that new model run didn't really give me any sort of confidence in saying, hey, we're going to break out of this pattern and warm back up. It continued with its cooler trend through the next 6 weeks.
And finally, anything out of the tropics that we ought to take a look at?
You know, we should be watching both sides of the U.S. and the tropics. On the one side, you know, of course, we've seen the decay of El Nino, and the atmosphere has certainly responded to that. What seems to be driving everything is more about what we call the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. But getting back into the tropics, the cooler water that's emerged, well, that's got a lot of folks in South America thinking about what that may mean for the upcoming growing season. Because if we develop, that's a big if, but if we develop a La Nina, that is something that a lot of folks in Brazil are going to be quite concerned about. Now, on the other side, we're watching three areas currently for tropical development. So this is in the Atlantic. We have going way out there over to Africa. We have a wave that's emerging that's got some potential. We have a wave that's in the mid part of the Atlantic, which just this morning started to show a bit more kind of curiosity, exploring some of those warmer waters and potentially developing into something over the next 5 days as it gets over to Lesser Antilles. And then there is a system just off of the southeast coast, right off of Florida. It's over the Bahamas. It's going to skirt the U.S. coast. It's probably the best chance we have at seeing our next named system here in the next 5 days. So the tropics are getting active, but remember, it is August, late August, and the peak of the hurricane season is just 3 weeks away. So we're going to have to watch the warm Gulf of Mexico very carefully for any would-be system to develop there in the coming days and weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions.